You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, or Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen after every game, it's very important, Millie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com, here with Sam Jam Packard, the great. I don't even know where you are right now, Sam. Where on this earth are you, this flat earth?
I'm at the great home of one T-Pain, a.k.a. Teddy Payne, a.k.a. Teddy Pender Ass Down. That'd be Tallahassee, Florida. Where else would I be?
I mean, where else would you be besides Tallahassee, Florida? Home of the Florida State Seminoles, which
I got lost running through FSU's campus today. Beautiful campus. Beautiful people down here.
They're actually, that's my favorite football team, believe it or not.
Is it because of Peter Warwick?
He used to be my guy. No, so my father went to law school in Florida, and he became a Seminoles fan and just kind of passed it down to me. And then through the years, he stopped being a Seminoles fan because they've had a lot of legal issues and stuff like that. But I stuck through it. I'm not a fair weather fan. Anyway, for the people listening to for the first time, I'm sure you're wondering why we're talking about Florida State Seminoles football. But we are actually the only Monday through Friday Celtics podcast in the world. And on top of that, the greatest Celtics podcast ever. If you want to subscribe to us, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else, and that's how we're going to start this thing. We've got a few topics to talk about. We've got Kyrie Irving taking a whole lot of three-pointers lately, which seems pretty damn important. We've got Greg Monroe getting his first DNP CD with the Celtics. We'll talk a little bit about Greg Monroe's fit, and I think Sam wants to know if I think the Celtics are back.
That's the big question, Jay King. That's what everyone wants to know. They've won three games in a row. They've looked pretty good. No one's really heard you speak on the Celtics recently. Are they officially back?
Depends what back means, right? So
that's not how you play the game, Jay King. You have to answer yes or no. Are they back?
The Celtics are, I mean, they're back to being what they were the whole time, I guess.
Which, so that's back, I would say.
So they're back. Yeah, they're back. They're back to being a really good team that's not great and still has flaws. They beat two bad teams, one mediocre team, and I don't think we should read too much into it. I do think the big takeaways from the last three games are, one, Marcus Smart makes a real difference. When Marcus Smart is there and you can get five legitimate quality defensive players for the bench, that's a big deal. And especially now that Terry Rozier is scoring and Marcus Smart, since he came back, has just been playing some really good playmaking basketball, that bench can be a real difference maker. And the other part, I think, is, and I don't know how real it is, but Kyrie, like I said before, is just taking a whole lot of three-pointers. And he's
not just taking them. He's making them. That's the key part.
No, I honestly think the key part is just taking them. I think
he's been pretty liberal with his 3-point attempts for this entire year. Let's check the basketball reference game log, but I don't think it's like he was ever shy about taking threes.
Well, he's averaging 7.6 3-point attempts per 36 minutes, which is more than he's ever taken before. And the last six games, he's averaging 9.8. per 36 minutes. He's currently on the second longest streak of his career of launching at least seven 3-point attempts a game, which is at six right now. And so he is launching more and more than he ever has. And I think it's just the way he's doing it, like just pulling up out of pick and rolls. He's being more aggressive looking for that shot, I think. And I think that's important because I think that takes the top off the defense. I think that makes guys overreact to him. I think if you look at all the top point guards, whether it's Stephen Curry or Damian Lillard, Kyle Lowry, all the best offensive point guards, all the guys who kind of warp defenses to what they do, they take – whenever they're open, they're shooting the damn ball. If someone goes under, they're shooting the damn ball. And I think that just changes how people guard you. And so Kyrie's starting to do that a little bit. And I think it's important that he continues to do that for the Celtics offense.
Yeah, it creates a whole other dynamic if that guy has to press out because he's already one of the best, you know, finishers at the rim. So if you're looking for his three-point shot, he's going to blow past you. It means you're paying a lot of attention to him coming around screens. So that pick and pop or that pick and roll with Al Horford just becomes that much more dangerous for the Celtics offense. What do you think the reason for this is? Do you think someone was chirping in his ear at All-Star Game about his three-point shooting ability? Do you think this is like a concerted effort from Brad Stevens to try and just encourage him to shoot more threes? Because you look at the three games, the first game, 9 attempts in 28 minutes against the Pistons, 12 attempts in 34 minutes against the Knicks, and then 8 attempts in only 24 minutes against the Grizzlies. They pretty much had that game won after the second quarter. Do you think it's a Kyrie decision, a Brad decision, or kind of a mind meld of the two Kaizen Warriors?
I think – so when the Celtics traded for Kyrie Irving, one of the things they wanted him to do from the very first time they got him was take more three-pointers. And one of the first conversations I had with someone in the Celtics organization after that trade, he said, you know – everybody, all the other top point guards, all the other best shooters in the world, whether it's James Harden, Stephen Curry, whoever, they all take a ton of threes. They all take a lot more three-pointers than Kyrie Irving. And so that's been one of the things they've wanted him to do from the beginning of the season. He's done it to an extent, but recently it just seems like he's developing more and more that gung-ho mentality, that just let-it-fly mentality. Which is what he needs, and
what the Celtics need. They can't score the basketball.
Yeah, I honestly believe that's a big deal. And when you look back, like at his time in Cleveland, even when LeBron wasn't on the court, the offense wasn't that good. And this year in Boston, like I don't think they've maximized their offensive capabilities with or without him on the court. But it just feels like a major development. If he continues to do that, and he's had a great season, regardless of whether he continues to do it. Obviously, he's been a huge part of what they do. Obviously, they're a lot better with him on the court, regardless. But the more threes he takes, and the more comfortable he is hurting defenses that leave him open and go under screens or whatever the case may be, I think the Celtics will be better off for that.
Yeah, it seems like when he makes a bunch of three-pointers, he goes from that like mid-20s to low 30s total. And here's the thing about the three-point shot. It's worth more than the two-point shot. And so,
ooh, yeah. That's the type of analysis you can only get here.
Well, I think we've seen the Celtics offense for this entire year basically struggle. There are definitely moments where especially the second unit just doesn't get buckets. But the first unit, it's like they play the kind of the motion offense where everybody eats. Everyone's getting like all the attempts that they want because Aaron Baines is taking 8 shots a game. And maybe it's just the Celtics have discovered that if we want to be an elite team, if we want to score with against the best defenses, if we want to put up a lot of points, if we want to score more than 100 points a game, we're going to need to rely on Kyrie like – more, because just like settling for Aaron Baines 12 footers or settling for whatever the shot is, although it might like work better within the flow of the offense, having Kyrie chuck will probably work better. I mean, of course there's going to be off nights, but you're getting down to the part of the season where you're trying to figure out what works best to win basketball games. And I think offensively, the let Kyrie Irving be great strategy is a good one. And right now better than the let's have great ball movement and just settle for an Aaron Baines 12-footer.
And it's more than just let Kyrie be great, right? It's the fact that once Kyrie, like, so he's averaging basically 4 pull-up threes per 36 minutes this season. He's at closer to 7 during this streak, the 6-game streak I was talking about. And when you have Kyrie just being so aggressive, it just opens everything up. Like, when you look at the way teams guard Stephen Curry, it opens things up. Like, Draymond Green, every time he catches the ball, it's basically a 4-on-3 fast break in the half court because teams have to send 2 guys at Stephen Curry. They have to always be out on Stephen Curry, and it opens up. And now Kyrie Irving isn't Stephen Curry because Stephen Curry just does stuff that nobody can. He creates shots and takes shots that nobody does.
He's the greatest shooter of all time.
Yeah, but Kyrie, he's a great shooter too, and he hasn't always weaponized that, I think, to the extent that he can. And so he needs to do that. I do think there's another level he can reach as a player, and I think we might be starting to see him reach that level as he grows more kind of bolder with what he does. And I don't know whether it's the Celtics stressing him to do that. I don't know whether it's just him looking at what's going on around the league and seeing all the other guys taking tons of shots and seeing how much that can impact the team's offense. But it's very clear lately, like, people on Twitter call it the fuck you three, right? And
oh yeah.
And it seems
so does Kyrie.
And it seems more and more he's taking the fuck you three. More and more he's just sprinting up the court and guys aren't there, defenders aren't there, and he's making them pay. And it just has a trickle-down effect to everybody else that I think is huge. And especially the Celtics, they've had the 29th-ranked offer, or they did have the 28th-ranked offense, rather, from January 1st to the All-Star break. They've been a lot better recently, and especially after the break, and Kyrie's hot streak is a huge part of that.
Well, think about how much that changes your mentality getting back on defense, because you're already worried about Kyrie Irving, probably the best finisher at the rim in the entire league. You're playing basically on your heels. Now you have to worry about him pulling up. It just kind of changes your entire transition defense. And I, like I said before, I think having him run pick and roll with Al Horford is important, because they're, like you mentioned, the 4-on-3 with Draymond Green. I think anyone on the Celtics, if you want them with the ball in their hands on a 4-on-3, it's Al Horford. You want point Horford. He's already shown he can be a playmaker. He can already shown that he can hit like the pick and pop threes. I think it has a real potential to open up the Celtics offense. So I think that's it's a good sign for the Celtics. Now it definitely helps that they played 2.5 shitty teams. I'm going to say the Pistons are a half shitty team.
Yep.
But you know what? It's a good sign. It's better than barely limping past them like they had done kind of going into the All-Star break. So I think it's a definitely good sign. The league better watch out. And I think it's all coinciding with the return of Marcus Smart, which I think is going to drastically improve their defense. And so, I don't know. There's reasons to feel good about the Celtics. Who knew? After 3 pretty convincing wins, people are feeling better in Celtics town.
The swings are so funny, man. Like, beat the Knicks and the Grizzlies pretty comfortably, and all of a sudden people are just excited.
Now we're going to get that 1 seed now.
Yeah,
3 wins in a row.
People just get excited, and then if they go to Houston and get stomped on by the Rockets, people will be devastated. It's just the swings of a season.
They're not going to get stomped on by the Rockets. Marcus Smart would never let that happen. He's too much in James Harden's head.
Ooh. Hot takes. Although that was a miraculous finish in the last game.
He straight dominated James Harden for 30 straight seconds and won that game after they came back from 26. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah,
Marcus Smart basically mentally cucked James Harden.
That might have been the game of the season. Definitely definitely the comeback of the season, considering the challenger. Not necessarily coming back too well. This is I don't even know if this segue makes sense.
I got a question for you, JK.
Yeah.
I'm going to just steal your segue. Do you feel responsible for Greg Monroe getting a DMP CD? You basically ethered him with evidence. You brought receipts for his play against the Knicks and how just the Knicks were attacking him possession after possession after possession. The next game, he doesn't even see the court. So I just want to know, is like, how does it feel to have been personally responsible for Greg Monroe's demise?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You killed Greg for moose. You're a moose hunter.
I'm pretty sure that had nothing to do with Greg Monroe getting benched. Not my story, but the defense against the Knicks, I'm sure, had something to do with it. The Knicks just, possession after possession, just tortured him. They put him in the torture chamber. They beat him off the dribble. They pulled up when he laid back. Trey Burke just ruined him. And that's Trey Burke, and that's the Knicks. So, Greg Monroe.
Hold on. Shouts to Trey Burke for bringing back cornrows, though. I was very impressed by his 26 points in.
Yeah.
Where the hell did that come from? That was a reigning junk thing, but I haven't been able to reign junk in a while.
Trey Burke's been playing well lately. Trey Burke's trying to redeem himself.
It's got to be the cornrows.
Greg Monroe needs to redeem himself, though. Like,
maybe he should get cornrows.
Okay, so how concerned are you about Monroe overall? Do you think it's an issue that he'll just never be the type of defender that they need, and he's not going to be able to survive on the court? Or is it just he needs to get acclimated to the Celtics and figure some things out, and then by the time the playoffs roll around, he can be a useful piece, at least in doses?
I'm not too worried about him. I don't think he's – just because I don't think he's that big a piece. I think he's a rotation big off the bench. If you think – I just don't expect Greg Monroe to get any crunch time minutes. If the Celtics are going to, like, finish the game, they're going to go small. You're going to see probably Smart, Jaylen Brown, Kyrie, Horford, and Tatum in there. Maybe mix in a little Tito, Marcus Morris. I just don't think Greg Monroe's top of that rotation. Now, if he's going to be this bad on defense and somewhat unplayable, the biggest discussion when he came in is, like, what does he do better than Aaron Baines? Well, Aaron Baines is at least a stout defender and is one of the better statistical defenders on the Celtics in terms of how the team performs with net rating when he's on the court. So, I mean, it's not the biggest concern. I just don't know what's the matchup that really – like facilitates or needing Greg Monroe to be on the court. Is he your answer to Tristan Thompson, or where do they really need Monroe? I mean, we're all excited about the signing just because it's the NBA and fans are just excited about any transaction, but I don't know. It just seems like him not coming up and stepping up as being the guy. I don't think it's the biggest deal. It would be disappointing, but I just don't see him getting that many minutes. I mean, we got my man Daniel Tice, who's pretty much the next big thing, I would say. but I don't know. Like, what role do you think Greg Monroe, at the level he's currently at, was like? What's his ceiling or what's his floor? Like, how much can Greg Monroe actually impact his team positively? And or could you just see him like getting a bunch of DNPs based on matchups alone?
So that was my question about Monroe when the Celtics first signed him was, is he an upgrade from Aaron Baines and Daniel Tice? If you play him, do you detract from your defense while potentially not adding much to your offense? And that's kind of how it's been so far. And obviously it's a really short, small sample. He's played, I believe, 6 games so far, plus a DMPCD. He's skilled and he's big and he can rebound and he's a good passer and everyone talks about how smart he is. I just think defensively he's going to need to be a lot better. They can't collapse when he's on the court defensively. They can't have him be this huge gaping hole that everyone can attack. Like, remember Oklahoma City, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago in the playoffs? And did Billy Donovan look at his assistant, or was it the other way around? And someone's like, we can't play Cantor. And that's what you can't have Monroe be. He can't be so bad that he's literally unplayable, because he does have other aspects that are useful. But like you said, like Baines is useful. Baines is good. Baines can defend against basically anyone. Daniel Tice, same thing. Like, he's really versatile. He
Tice
can
is also amazing.
Yeah, so he's got a lot of competition for minutes in the Celtics front court, and And I don't
That's
know.
That's why it's not a big concern that way, because I don't see where – what situation Greg Monroe is the guy that's putting them over, or is like what situation they're going to really need Greg Monroe. There are certain matchups where you'd like them, the Celtics, to be able to go a little bit bigger and still have some sort of offense. But I just still think the Celtics are at their best when Al Horford's at the five. And so I just don't think that, like, in crunch time when the Celtics need to be playing their best basketball, Greg Monroe was ever going to be a part of that. And so, yes, you want him to be playable. You don't want teams to just attack him. But I don't ever think he was as big a part of the Reds – I mean, not the Red Sox. That's wild. The Celtics playoff plans as much as even – like Enes Kanter would be for the Thunder. Like, I think Kanter played a way bigger role for the Thunder than I think Monroe has on the Celtics now.
Yeah, the one thing Ainge and Stevens have both said is that they were thin in the front court before they got Monroe, and that if any injury had happened, they would have been really thin. And I think that makes sense. Like, if Baines or Tice had gone down, or God forbid Horford, then they would have had a huge drop-off. It would have been like Yabu time, or you got to go small all the time and put a lot of stress on your wings. So I think Monroe as a like depth piece is could end up being important. I still do think he's got a long way to go, and as far as defensively, he's just been targeted, and you saw it in the Cleveland game, you saw it in the New York game. He's just been a big defensive minus. Well,
do you think it's?
Go ahead.
Do you think it's something he can fix, or he's just like a slow dude who can't like move his feet that well?
Well, he is a slow dude who can't move his feet that well, but
I don't think fix like a scheme, or is it just like
I don't think he'll always be that bad. So I talked to a couple of scouts about him, and they were saying that last year in Milwaukee, he was really moving his feet well for him. And probably play the best defense of his life. And so there is a level of defense that he's not like a total atrocity. And that's like if he's an okay defender, that's fine. You can get away with that. He just needs to not be really bad. And he's been
that's always my
really
goal.
Bad in a couple
my
of
My goal
games.
Is just to not be terrible.
Yeah. And my goal is to just survive. I just want my knees to survive these days.
Oh, I was just talking about life. But on basketball court, yeah, that's also my goal.
Fair enough. What was
– I have two rules. One is don't be a dickhead, and two, just don't be terrible.
Those are two pretty good rules, man.
Well, thank you. Don't. Came up with them myself.
I kind of like to be a dickhead on the basketball court, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't have nearly enough competence to be a dickhead. But if I do, if I ever, like, hit a game-winning three, you know I'm Yabu Dabbing. Like, I've thought about that ever since I saw the Yabu Dab. It's like, one day I'm going to pull that out myself. And so that's the only time I can be a dickhead is dance celebrations. I don't have enough actual skill.
There you go. So do you think the Celtics are back?
No, not really. I mean, they've won, like, games against good opponents. Clearly the return of Marcus Smart has helped, but I need to see their offense be more consistent for a longer period of time and see their offense score against a very good defense or go toe-to-toe with a very good offense. I just, like, I'm waiting for that challenge. That Houston game is going to be huge. If they beat or play very competitively against the Rockets, then I'll say they're back. But right now, I'm not ready to give it to them. Three wins against the Pistons, the Knicks, and the Grizzlies? Come on, man. They're not back yet.
That's not enough for you. That's not enough.
No.
I will say, though.
Yes, it is.
I will say, though, that Stevens did kind of tweak the rotations a little bit. And it seems
go
to be,
on.
It seems to be working. Like Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart are usually the first two subs now. It used to always be Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And then they're kind of running Horford or Kyrie with some of the subs for a while, and then he still ran the all bench unit against the Grizzlies. And I think it was I don't know if it was the all bench unit or the Grizzlies, probably a mixture of both, but that was one of the most dominant stretches the Celtics have played all year, the 23-6 stretch in the second half against Memphis. That was just a smackdown. Marcus Smart, he's fun to watch, man. He's just...
That guy really loves basketball. It's fantastic. I'm still kind of like amazed by that crazy wrong-way steal he had in breakaway against the Knicks. Like, he came around the completely wrong angle and still got a steal, and like, that's just not how basketball generally works, but you know what? For Marcus Smart, rules don't matter.
I don't think it was a wrong angle. I think he didn't want Trey Burke to know he was going to be there. He wanted Trey Burke to think he was just laying back. And then Trey Burke turned around.
Sneaky motherfucker. It's fun to watch.
Yeah. But and then the last play of the first half from Memphis, and it ended up getting the Celtics 3 points. Not that they needed it. They were up 20 at the time. But they're up 20. And he hounds one guy, switches over to another guy, hounds him, and deflects the ball out of bounds. Like, just an unbelievable play while they're up 20 in the last play, final seconds of the second half. Nobody really does that.
Like, you want to know what? The Celtics might be back because Marcus Smart is back. I don't know. You really talked me into that. I got real jazzed about your Marcus Smart soliloquy there. And they might be back. I don't know. I'm excited to watch the games because there's this question that it's on everyone's mind. Are the Celtics back? And I just don't know if we know that. You have to tune in Wednesday night to find out.
You have to tune in Wednesday night.
I should plug some whatever station that the Celtics happen to be on. I don't know. Some sort of sports network. But yeah, watch the Celtics. It's fun.
It is fun. And then listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast the next day. If you don't subscribe to us, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else. We're the only Monday through Friday Celtics podcast. We are the best Celtics podcast ever. And that's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.